Welcome to Soul Chat, a platform created by queens, recognized queens, to help bring out the queen in you and helping you master yourself holistically. We aim to be the light at the end of the tunnel with topics and guests that speak to your soul. So join us as we take you on an epic journey with powerful people sharing powerful stories and tools to bring out the best in you.
Hey everybody, welcome to Soul Chat. I'm your host, Ev Tatora. And today I'm so honored to have this very, very, very special guest here with me. I'm gonna read her bio. You guys know how I am with bios. I think bios represent, you know, what we do, but they're not really the essence of who we are. So without further ado, I want to introduce you guys, Nico Sherry. She is an accomplished author, financial literacy advocate, former realtor, entrepreneur, and entrepreneurial strategist. For the last 13 years, she has assisted with hundreds of families on the road to building wealth and leveraging debt. After dedicating over a decade to the real estate industry, Nico realized that there was a huge knowledge gap within the middle class between having credit and understanding how to manage debt. Taking on a challenge as an opportunity, Nico developed a credit enhancement program called Credit Matters, Understanding Your Credit, to help close that gap. She has also undertaken a personal mandate to educate people on how to better position themselves for wealth creation by leveraging their business and personal credit to achieve their long-term goals. Nico is passionate about empowering families to win financially because she witnessed firsthand how many Black Americans are unaware that they are being targeted systematically by the credit bureaus for subprime loans, higher interest rates, and inaccurate data that can cripple the pursuit of the American dream. She believes it is critical that Blacks understand how to play to win, or we will lose within the complex yet simple game of money. Having an intimate knowledge of the myriad landmines along the path to financial success has positioned her as a master tour guide along the fast track to establishing and building generational wealth. Nico spends much of her time helping others by video blogging, hosting free credit webinars, teaching money management for youth, and sharing market trend insights. Woo! Amazing, amazing woman, you guys. I came across her a couple years back on a video she shared, which is still up on YouTube on her channel, Nico Sherry. You can look that up on YouTube on how we put down payments on cars. So you guys can check that out. We're not going to get into that today, but we are going to get into some really great topics that we need to talk about specifically in the Black community, which is really, I think you are the perfect person to have this conversation. And I love, the thing I love about you too, and I just have to note this, is that not that I see either or wrong, let me just put that, preface that, but you are not flashy and you don't show a lot of your personal assets to encourage people to believe in what you do, right? Which I find to be very unique, because either way, I don't think it's a bad thing, but some people leverage that, but don't have the numbers and don't have the results as much as you do, which is why I just appreciate for doing what you do. And just paying homage to your platform, you don't only talk about wealth, you talk about many other issues, which we'll get into later in the podcast. But I just wanna ask you, so I always ask everybody, that was your bio, but who is Nico? In your own words, who is Nico?
Well, that was a great bio. I want to meet her.
Me too.
I was like, wow, that sounds good. Dude. But really, I'm just your everyday homegirl, kind of. And that's what I think what translates across to you is me not being flashy. Because I'm just your regular degler person, right? Like, I never put on airs because I just don't find it being necessary, you know? And I think, you know, quality over quantity is always gonna trump. So, you know, I stand on my word, I stand on my how I feel, I stand on my authenticity. And I think anybody can come across as having things, and but they can't come across as being authentic. So, you know, that's where I lead.
That was so beautiful. And I think overall, it's probably why I gravitate towards you, because I'm big on authenticity. I think it's a buzzword, but I think many people don't really stand in authenticity, and especially with social media, it's so easy to put on a mask. It's so easy to pretend, you know, what you're not. So I think that's, I know for a fact that's what's helped me to gravitate towards you, which is such a beautiful, beautiful way to position yourself. I feel like that sets you up for longevity opposed to, you know, the superficial. I really want to get into your story because I didn't know your story at all. I didn't know the depth of who you are, which to me is like more flavoring, more seasoning to the person itself, especially when you see who they are today. So you shared your story on a live some time ago. Can you just get into that a little bit, really just starting from like childhood? Because a lot of my guests, we tend to talk about healing. We tend to talk about, you know, our past and our childhoods. And I think it sets a powerful tone of who we can become. And I'm a huge proponent of turning our pain into power, which is obviously something that you have done very well.
Yeah, you know, and so my childhood wasn't matrix, right? Because on one side of it, let me preface this. My father died when I was 6, but he was not my biological father, but he was my father nonetheless. He was the man who was there from birth. He was all I knew. I never heard of a stepdad. I was completely unaware that he wasn't the man who helped birth me, right? So his death was extremely devastating, you know, at 6 years old, completely. He had been sick for a while, but I wasn't aware of that. I just thought he had these really cool pajamas and a machine in a house for dialysis, right? I didn't know what dialysis was, but I thought he was pretty special because he had it and nobody else did.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he passed away, and my mother remarried, you know, a while after that. And her husband ended up being my abuser for the next few years. So I was a very outgoing and rambunctious little girl on the inside, but I became very timid because I lived in an environment that was intimidating, mm-hmm. right? So it made me very cautious and overly cautious about things I wanted to aspire to do. But every time I had an opportunity to break out of that, I would. I played the violin for 5 years. That was me trying to express myself. Mm-hmm. I was very athletic. I was an athlete all of my life. I was a cheerleader. I played basketball. I ran track. I played volleyball, even at 5'3". my little bitty self, I was always very competitive, always very aggressive, because at home, for a very long time, I couldn't be who I wanted to be. So anytime there was an outside expression of who I could be, then I would try and be that. And I probably was always who I am now, but I wasn't allowed to be that. And, you know, people admire me for my outspokenness, where there came a point in my life from being told, you know, quiet or I'll kill you, right? Don't tell anyone or you'll die or your mother will die, you know, and harboring that kind of fear and, like I said, intimidation for such a long time. When I finally had a voice, I promised that I would never be quiet again, that anytime I felt something or I wanted to express myself, I would always do that, you know, and I wouldn't let anything keep me from doing that. So being very expressive, being able to live, you know, in my truth after that point in my life has really developed me into the person I am. And I think that's why people, again, tend to gravitate to me, because it is authentic and it does come from a good place.
That is so beautiful. And there are tidbits that I didn't know, it doesn't shock me, but it's always like, oh, you know, when you gravitate towards people and you do learn more about their story, which I have so many points that I can relate to with your story and how we, you know, as kids, you don't really know how to cope, you know, and that's really where we learn you know, how we're going to cope in the future as well, right? Some of us lean into, you know, curriculums and sports, and some of us lean into the more negative side of things, which can be very detrimental to our future. That is just such a beautiful story. And one of the other things you also shared that I was admiring was you shared a story about your grandfather and like what you learned from him, which I know I have grandparents. Luckily enough, I have grandparents who are very wise. And it's funny because I've sat down many times and I've said, what is so different about you? Like, why are some of these things so common sense to you, but everybody else is not really, it doesn't come that easy. And I definitely hope, like, you know, our grandparents and your, you know, the people before you, if they're not passing something down, maybe it's not generational wealth, but if they're not at the very minimum passing down wisdom to you, I find that that's very detrimental to who we become as adults, because there were things that I understood, or there were, you know, luckily enough, I had them pouring into me. Like, they've never given up on me, even at my times when I wasn't making the best decisions. But that wisdom and that ability to have people to mold your mind. And I feel that looking at what you had shared, a lot of what your grandfather helped you do was to help mold your mindset about wealth and money. So can you share a little bit about that?
Well, let me tell you, my grandfather, my grandfather was probably the most, masculine man I've ever met in my life. I've never heard him raise his voice other than when he was preaching. My grandfather, my grandparents lived in Northwest Indiana. They lived in East Chicago. They moved from Gary to East Chicago during my childhood. And I went to live with them when I was a freshman in high school. So one night, I decided to go out with my cousin, who was a terrible influence on me, and get drunk, right? And however old you are in the ninth grade, I'm sure I was probably like 14 or 15.
About 15, yeah.
So I'm in a bathroom, you know, just, you know, hurling my brains out. And my grandfather comes walking past the bathroom in the middle of the night, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm dead. And he doesn't say anything. So the next morning I decided, I'm hungover, I'm not going to school. Mm-hmm. And he says, oh yes, you are. Mm-hmm. Because if you make a decision like the one you made last night, because mm-hmm. I'm thinking, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
But he's like, you know, because if you make a decision, and he was so calm, because if you make a decision like you did last night, then you have to go to school.
Right.
I was like, oh my God. Like, that was his version of yelling. Mm. He was so serious. And everything he said, it was so methodical. Like, it was, every time he spoke, you knew that you had to do whatever he said. Mm. Period. Mm-hmm. No questions asked. Mm-hmm. He was a business owner. He owned real estate. He never asked anyone for anything. He had 8 children. Plus, he took care of kids in the neighborhood, you know, who were homeless or needed anything. Of course, he was a minister, so he was always giving up until he passed away. Just days before he passed, he was in his 70s, and he had just driven from Northwest Indiana to Texas just to pray for a woman. Mm. Or Mississippi, I can't remember one. But when I had my first son, I lived in California, and I decided to drop out of trade school and go to East Chicago with my grandparents and just, you know, run away from my problems. Mm-hmm. My grandfather sat me down, and he told me to tell him what happened, why I was there. I sat down with him. I was crying my eyes out. I was bawling. I was telling him what a terrible person my son's father was for not helping me. My son was 8 months old. I was doing this by myself, and I was telling him how much he cheated on me before. And he was like, before you have to be, I'm like, yeah, he's been like this. So when I got done whining and crying, and I'm sitting there, he's just emotionless. he said, what you need to do is pull yourself together. He said, you know what that man was before you had a baby.
Yeah.
You had a baby anyway. Then you jump on a plane and you drop out of school, which is the best thing you could do for yourself. And you come out here, what are me and your grandmother going to do? We're done raising children. You need to get back on that plane and go handle your business like the woman you were when you decided to have that baby.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's not what I was expecting.
Right.
Nonetheless, I had to grow up in that moment really, really, really fast. Mm. And I did indeed the next few days, hop my butt back on the plane, went back home, re-enrolled in school, handled my business like a woman, never asked anybody for anything, never got back on welfare at that time. And I took care of my son. I graduated from that school. I got a really good job making over $30,000 a year over 20 years ago.
Mm.
And got my own place, car, took care of my son, started saving money, and I became that woman that I was supposed to be.
Mm.
You know, because you need to understand real quick and real fast, life isn't going to be fair.
Yeah.
So pull yourself together.
Mm.
And always handle your business like a woman. Whatever decisions you make are your decisions alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you're responsible for that. And you're going to have to handle yourself like a woman.
Mm.
And I did just that.
Mm-hmm. And that's
so my grandfather, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
And I was saying he just taught me a lot of lessons. And that's just how he was. He was a straight shooter too, just like me.
Mm.
And he made you own. Can I cut?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, he made you own your shit.
Yeah.
And so I had to own mine. And if you'll notice on my platform, when women come telling me, oh, I'm a single mom, I feel just like my grandfather felt at that time. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what am I supposed to do about that? That was your choice.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a decision that you made. So as a woman, you're going to have to handle that.
Yeah.
Whether the man is, you know, everything you wanted him to be or nothing you wanted him to be.
Hmm.
You make that decision, you got to handle it.
Yes. Yeah. And that's so much wisdom because we don't, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we look at self-care and, you know, it's really just the ideals we have for what things should look like. But self-care and self-love is also that, like, having friends that are like, you know, you were wrong. You, like, you know, he basically checked you, like, you know.
Yeah, he did.
Sympathy for you. And it, honestly, even as a woman myself, leaving a relationship, I've had to, you know, you got to gulp up your put on your big girl pants and acknowledge you were very foolish. You know, the mistakes you made, not to beat yourself up, but just to get real with it and not, you know,
right.
Your book, it's not him, it's you. So what part did I play in this? What toxicity did I condone? What, you know, what things
exactly.
did I overlook for years, I tell you, which has just been my own, you know, I've been single for almost 10 months. So it's just been this whole time reflecting on that and being real with that and ridding myself of, you know, the toxicity that I have to have resonated with to have accepted the many things that I could complain about today, you know.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's very powerful, and it's powerful to have people around you like that. And I think a lot of people don't like that. I think a lot of people are so sensitive and have not had that home training, if you will, that they don't like to be checked. They don't like to, especially women. Women don't like to be told, you the problem, sis. You are the problem too. Which is another elephant that's in the black that's in the room of the black community, but we're going to get to that later. Let's talk a little bit about Invest Gary, because that's something that I think is definitely going to change the narrative of where we can go. And I think even for me, it's opened my eyes. And you shared a post that I had to laugh about it, because I'm like, you know, I can share a certain quote that says, you know your worth, right? And I'll get a 100 likes on that. But I had reshared something that you said. You said something like, we need to heal our relationship with money in the black community or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There were probably about 4 likes,
yeah.
Which I had to laugh because, you know, we could talk about everything else, but we don't want to talk about wealth and money. We don't want to talk about you know, really overcoming those hurdles mentally, because poverty is a place and a mindset. Mindset, obviously, you can change that quicker than you can change your position in life. But let's talk about Invest Gary and really just that wealth mindset and just that elephant in the room, especially in the Black community. And really quickly, I saw another post today that a guy was saying, you know, people will, you know, people don't have an issue investing in, you know, high-end products, you know, all the labels you see celebrities and stuff wearing. But when it comes to our own community, you know, people will say, you know, can I get a discount? Or you've talked about people trying to take the free game you give out and not invest in your course, which has all the information. And, you know, they end up losing that money because they didn't want to invest in what you had to offer. They felt like they learned everything and they didn't need to know anything else. So let's talk about Invest Gary and really just the elephant in the room of the Black community when it comes to wealth.
So Invest Gary, of course, I just mentioned my grandparents lived in Gary, and then they moved to East Chicago. So I grew up in that area. My mother, she moved to California when I was like 3 years old. I was born in Gary. And so I would visit Gary every summer until I was, you know, an adult to stay with my family. So my company is called Excel University. And my grandfather's name was Excel, so you should know that. So, you know, everything that I do has some form of legacy attached to it. It's not random by far, okay? And my thoughts around it when I first decided to invest in Gary was like, wow, you know, the destruction of Black Wall Street just really didn't sit well with me, and I really want to see the Black community thrive. And how I thought that we can thrive is through enterprise, and not just, you know, hair, lashes, barbershops, you know, wigs and makeup and skincare, right? Yeah. And with actual enterprise and industries, you know, banking, technology, engineering, you know, solar power, marijuana, you yeah. know, Bitcoin, that's part of technology, but, you know, currency, you know, we have an opportunity to thrive again.
Yes.
And I wanted to recreate Black Wall Street. And I thought, where could that happen? And Atlanta is so expensive here. And, you know, it already has the tempo for what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but what about Gary? No, you know, it's empty. Nobody there. It's got to be super cheap. So I want to go there. And someone says to me, well, if you want to invest in Gary, they have these tax liens. And I'm like, what the hell are tax liens? I never even heard of it before. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I had a real estate license for over a decade. But people don't understand how compartmentalized real estate is. Mm-hmm. It's very segmented. You have residential, you have buyers, then you have sellers. That could be two totally separate departments. There's the paperwork, there's logistics, there's the financing, there's the title work, there's the legal work, there's inspections. There's a multitude of things when it comes to real estate. And there's commercial real estate, there's different industries, there's different type of commercial real estate. You can do buildings, you can do agriculture. Like, there's a multitude of things, apartment complexes, that's different than duplexes, that's different than single family residence, that's different than owning a school, you know. So I only knew what I knew in real estate, which was very simplistic residential. That was it. I did very well in real estate. I made lots of money. I was a top agent in California. You know, life was good and very shiny. But when she mentioned tax liens to me, I had never heard about it. So I had to start all over again from the infancy stages of growth and education. And so me being the knee-jerk person that I am when I'm on to something, I'm like, well, when's the next auction? They're like, next week. I bought a plane ticket like that day or the next day. Mm-hmm. And I flew out to the auction, and the person that was supposed to meet me there, I won't say who it is because people know this person, didn't show up or answer their phone. But, you know, because I'm such a knee-jerk person, I call more than one person because I want to make sure it happens. Yeah. And so the other person I called was like, yeah, come here, I'm waiting on you. And I get to the auction. I was introduced to this guy. He's supposed to be like the guru of tax liens and very religious and all these different things. And, you know, he's a pastor and blah, 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 so trustworthy. You know, he bids on a house for me that I picked out. I was very excited. None of us had seen the property, not even him. And I won the bid. I was through the roof. I won the house for $500, literally, literally. $500 at the auction. I'm jumping up and down. I'm going crazy. I don't even know what I got, right? So he, I, and a bunch of people, we're like caravanning around Gary. We're looking at all the properties that we won in the auction. We get to my property. Boy, when I tell you that house was humongous, it looked like a mansion, I mean, in the area. It was huge. What it was is it looked like it had been a triplex that someone turned into one great big house. And so a few people went inside. You're really not supposed to do that. I especially know that now. But they went inside and it was in like immaculate condition considering that it was a $500 house.
Yeah.
Like it was amazing. And I had my video on Facebook, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going crazy. And, you know, I had over 1,000 people watching me go nuts over this property. And I had, like, almost 250,000 views or something like that. And I'm like, I got this house for $500. Like, I can't believe it. So, anyway, long story short, the guy ended up swindling me out of the house. I guess he wanted it, you know, like it really was a good deal. I guess he wanted the house. He ended up swindling me out of the house. I lost my money. I hired an attorney. She ended up being like a friend of his or something. So I lost my money with the attorney. I lost my money with the property. I was very bitter. I was very pissed about it. I felt disrespected. He was telling people that I wasn't very smart, that I was supposed to wait until he got the deed. What the truth of the matter is that if you let someone get the deed, you'll never be able to get the property back. So the attorney did do one good thing. She did show up at court and prevent him from getting a deed. So what actually has to happen in that process is what I have done for many of my clients, which once I bid on the property for them, I then assign the property to them. Legally, I would pay a notary to come to my office, and I would sign off like 150 deeds to people. I would just literally sit there for however amount of time it took for me and her to get through all of those documents and sign them all, and then send them to the respective attorney's offices or to the client, and done deal. And then they hire their attorney to take them to court, and they get the deed. So during my infancy and ignorant stages, and ignorant not as a stupid, but ignorant of the process, I didn't know that he was lying. So it just turned into this big thing. So I decided, you know what? I'll never let anybody be taken advantage of by him or anyone else. I'll learn this process my damn self.
Yeah.
So that's what I did back in 2008. This will be my ninth auction that I'm attending this September. I have over 250 people registered in my program. I started with 5. The first auction I did after that whole fiasco of me losing the house, the first auction I did, I had 5 people. And I now have 250 plus. And, you know, what growth, right? And I've made a tremendous amount of money from it. And I've also acquired, you know, an apartment complex of $500, a bi-level for $500, and a plot of land for about $800. So I've been able to acquire property And it's, you know, it's really been amazing. One of the properties is for my kids, and the apartment complex, I'm going to put that in a trust for my grandson. And so I've just been, you know, learning myself, and I've been teaching people. And, you know, I've had some very intelligent people come on board. One of my clients, she has acquired, which I didn't know, she's acquired 17 commercial properties there.
Wow.
And one of her properties, she got a contract with a company who wants to put 5G poles, or I'm not even sure what they're called, adapters, I'm not sure, but they want to use her property for that. Mm-hmm. And so she finds someone who gets a contract, and they want to pay her almost $10,000 a month.
Wow.
For the usage of her property. Yeah. You know, so, you know, it's just amazing the growth that's happening there. When I first started, people thought I was stupid. I remember having a Facebook post that lasted for almost 2 days of people arguing with me. They were pulling stats. And they were like, why are you having people go to Gary? You're like basically saying I was being disrespectful. I didn't know what I was doing. It was the same thing with Bitcoin when they accused me. When I had someone teaching my community Bitcoin, they said I was scamming, that Bitcoin was fake. And at that time, Bitcoin was only $800. Now, if everyone would have bought when, you know, I told them it was hot, instead of listening to those fools, you know, we'd all be doing really, really well right now, right? Even when Bitcoin was at its lowest, 3,000, 4,000, right? That's quite a come up from $800.
Absolutely.
But just like with Gary, just like with Bitcoin, just like with Netflix, is something else I told people to jump into. You know, people thought I was crazy. Now they have a $400 million casino that just broke ground there. Now Amazon has a facility there. UPS just signed a 10-year contract there. We just had a real estate investment trust, a corporation just came in and bought $10.4 million worth of assets in the city to rebuild. Like, so much money is coming into that place is astonishing.
Mm.
It's astonishing. The housing development has a huge project coming. And what they do have is money, and what they don't have is property for people to live in. So I'm trying to get my investors to come in droves now, why it's super cheap to buy this property, so that when they do gentrify it, which is exactly what's happening, so when they do gentrify it, then we can begin to create a legacy for our families.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
And the reason people say, why Gary? And I'm like, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have a better place? Like, you know, they're like, well, I want something in my city. Well, to me, that sounds like intimidation and fear.
Yes.
Because you'll go to an online college. You don't care what that is.
Right.
Why wouldn't you want to have an investment? What difference does it make where it's located?
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's creating revenue for you and your family, as long as it's creating a legacy for you and your family,
mm-hmm.
It's time for us to shift our mindsets away from fear. We're so timid. Oh, I wish it was here. No, you don't. Say what you really mean. What you really mean is, I'm afraid to have something that I can't see.
Yeah.
That's what you really mean.
Yeah. And it's so deep. I mean, when it comes to wealth mindset, which is something that I've been, you know, working on for so long, you know, because you have to have the awareness that your mindset is off, you know, and that it's poverty is, if you look at it this way, poverty is really a sickness, right? That, you know, because it consumes everything that you do, and you won't make smart decisions like investing in real estate. You won't even have an interest in it, right? And then you'll kind of, you know, you'll say things like what you just said, you know, well, why there, opposed to seeing that as the opportunity, and just knowing when something is an opportunity. And I've come to see that, you know, wealth mindset, it just, like I said, it just consumes you in so many ways. When it, you know, it might come down to even filling up your gas tank, right? When you fill up your gas tank and you're in a broke person's mindset, you're going to put that $10 in. And we all know in the long run, it's not good for your car. In the long run, that $10 is going to run out a lot quicker than if you just fill it up. You know, so I've just been able to even transition my own mindset to being able to see opportunity and not be afraid. You know, I have another woman I deal with. She's in Vegas and she sells antique African art. You know, and when we talk about assets and looking at certain things and understanding, you know, we should have that mentality of focusing on assets, right? Because we'll be quick to buy the nice things. We'll be quick to go buy a car we can't really afford. But when it comes to taking that same mentality and investing, we don't do it. Even me, I just paid off my car and I'm just sitting there like, dang, I just spent over 20 grand over the course of these, you know, 6 years you have a loan, and all I have to show for it is a car that is depreciated.
Right.
So now it's an asset to me, but when I owe the bank, it's not an asset to me. It's a liability, especially if I can't make that payment.
Well, so, you know, you can definitely take that money, you know, and put it into an investment property. Like that 20 grand in an investment property would actually be paying you right now. Right. It'd be paying you. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to get people to understand more and more and more about making those smart decisions. Like, I don't even have a car. Like, I've been renting my dad's car from him for 5 years. He got a car, but they already had a car, my parents did. So then I took over the note and started paying for his car. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, I was going to get a Bentley at one point in time, but my cheap self, I was like, ooh, that's, you know, $4,000 a month. That's, you know, that's a lot, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just perspective. I think it's just the ability, like, to me, it's no different than, you know, your situation when you went to your grandfather's and you're crying about, you know, your decisions and stuff like that. I think when we're able to reflect on the decisions that we've made in the past, and for me, my highlight has been, it really definitely has been wealth and wealth building and what decisions am I making that are going to not just benefit my kids, but their kids and their kids' kids, right? To think that far along. And I think there's a proverb, it might be a Native American saying or something. It's kind of like you plant a tree knowing that you're not going to sit under that tree. And I think a lot of us don't have that visionary mindset, and we're not willing to get uncomfortable to even adopt a mindset that's going to allow us to grow. And like you said, this opportunity to thrive right now, I know a lot of people are, you know, fear mongering and feeling a lot of fear with the pandemic. But for me, I'm like, there is so much opportunity right now to get ahead. There's so much opportunity to connect and to grow and to invest and to really just make some big moves that I think we haven't had. Even just that information, like you learning that information, you had to go through everything you went through to pass that information on to everybody else.
I mean, you know, people harass me, they talked about me, now they whisper to each other, so tell me more about that Invest Gary. Now that they see, you know, my clients coming up, now that they see, you know, major corporations, like, I'm tired of waiting for, you know, the white flag, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm tired of waiting for the white flag for us to make a decision about what's good for us. Mm-hmm. You keep talking about your independence and what you want, and then when you have an opportunity, you still wait on basically permission. Yeah. Or how they make it look. You don't want the ugly city. You want to wait until it's so expensive you can't even live there before you start investing. Mm-hmm. You know, you overpay for everything that way. And, you know, it's unproductive. And I'll tell you a saying, you know, similar to what you were just saying. A quote that I heard was, a rich man plans for a decade for his family. A rich man does. A decade. But a wealthy man plans for a century. A rich man plans for a decade. A wealthy man plans for a century. The problem with our community is that we're so trapped in the right now, we can't even see past tomorrow, let alone 10 years from now, let alone a century. So that the mindset that I'm trying to create within certain people. Some people just never going to get it. Someone said to me on Facebook, it was so funny. She said, "You talk about money so much, you can't take it with you." I'm like, exactly, Einstein. I'm not taking shit with me. That's the whole point. I'm going to leave this here for my legacy, for my children, and for my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. You got that right. Like the fact that she said that, and she thought she was the smart one, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. She thought she was letting me know something, because it had never even occurred to her that this wasn't about me. It never even occurred to her to think past right now. It never even occurred to her that her statement was so ignorant. Again, not in stupidity, but in a lack of knowledge. It never occurred to her. She thought that that was an intelligent statement. She thought she was letting me know something until I let her know something.
Yeah, and it really, it makes me think, you know, and that's the ignorance behind money mindset and, you know, like healing our relationship with it. I heard an analogy that says, you know, money's like a wealthy woman. If you chase her, she'll run. You know, and just many of us don't, if we were honest, we don't like money. We find it, you know, you think about different quotes we've heard our whole lives, you know, money's the root of all evil, which is a whole other paragraph after that, you know, that people don't mention. It's the love of money, right? But even still, really, you know, figuring out how to fix and repair that relationship with that, because that is an ignorant statement. And people can deny money all they want, but it's right up there with air. Right? That's why people...
Right. And, you know, we have so many... I saw a post the other day where a person was like, I'm not going to, you know, get any life insurance or somebody will kill me. And I was like, really? Really? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you think is going to happen? Someone's going to kill you for your life insurance? And that poverty mindset is so toxic. I remember my son's father, I won't say which one, said that to me when I was talking about life insurance. And I said, I'll kill you right now for free.
Right. How about that?
I don't even need any money.
Right.
I can handle that today.
Yeah. And it's proof of how ignorant and deep that mindset is, right? Because it's saying things out of the fear, right? When you do something out of fear, it sounds so dumb. You know, it's kind
of... We're very fearful of everything. Oh, what? I can't invest. You know, why? What's there? You know, it's like everything that's going to benefit us is a boogeyman. Mm-hmm. Life insurance is a boogeyman. I saw someone the other day say, don't show your wealth in, you know, in the Black community, because, you know, people will attack you. Mm-hmm. So what is that? What is, like, you got to get a little deeper than that. So what that actually says is, children growing up will see white people and other communities showing wealth and think that we're poor. So if you never see anyone in your community other than an athlete, so why do you think they all want to be athletes?
Right.
So why aren't the doctors, the attorneys, and the engineers, and, you know, the business owners exemplifying these things as well?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think our daughters want to be strippers?
Yeah,
because they're the best dancers? No, because they glorify, they're the ones who have the money. I remember watching a post, and they were like, oh, this stripper made, you know, $50,000 in a night or something like that. And I was like, okay, you know, $30,000. She made $30,000 in a night. I made $30,000 in an hour. Nobody celebrated me or wrote one article about me. And, you know, it's those things, right? What's being glorified and what's being, you know, put out in front of our children. They make business women, they look boring, and, you know, and, you know, and that's why I like my business, even though people say I'm too much. I don't care what you think about what I am or what I'm not. If I'm too much for you, then you're right. Get away from me.
Yeah.
But, you know, when young girls look at me, they look at someone who's fly.
Yeah.
And like you said, I'm not flashy. So I hopefully look like something that's attainable for them as far as success, intelligence, and beauty.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You definitely do. You definitely do. And, you know, it's so funny because I think about, you know, I talk a lot about spirituality, faith, and all these things. And it's like, you know, people don't realize you are one of those people who has a visionary mindset. So visionaries are, back to the quote you just said, you can see 100 years forward, right? You can see when, oh, you know, Netflix, y'all better invest in this, is about to blow up, right? You see things happening and you just, your spidey senses start tingling.
Right.
Ooh, that was a thunder. Wow. Hey God. You know, you have that visionary mindset, and people need to remember when it comes to anything in life, you know, especially people who are very, you know, are Christian folks, you know, a lot of Black people are Christian, you know, people talk about Jesus, but Jesus was a visionary. And if he was here today, people would crucify him. He would get crucified every lifetime he came back, because people do not accept what they cannot understand. People do not open their minds to things they can't understand. They would rather condemn it and come on your post. Like, I've seen a couple posts where I'm just like, I can't even believe people have time to go on social media to be negative. Like, I can't even believe you wasted your typing fingers to express that negative opinion on somebody else's page. To me, that just is just mind blowing to me. But
right, you know, there's so many fallacies, you know, like even home ownership. I'm going to do a whole video series on that. You know, home ownership for, you know, Black families is not what they portray it to be. Mm. You know, I'm sick of the lies. I'm sick of the we don't have access to the loans lies. That may have been the case at one point in time. That's not the case. That's not where we're losing our money. We're losing our money because we can't retain the home. Mm. Anybody can get a loan if they're going to allow you to have a 580 credit score, and they're going to allow you to use 80% of your income to even qualify. You can get in there, but can you stay in there? Because that's where the wealth is created. The wealth is not created. Where the wealth is created with you getting a home is with the banks. The banks eat off the Black community because they keep getting told to buy into property all the time as homeowners. Mm-hmm. But they don't create a strategy for them keeping a home. Why do you think that there's no mortgage insurance for if something happens, you lose your job? And, you know, they don't tell you the structure. There are insurances and there are protections out there. There's asset protection that you can have, but that's never a discussion. And you could pull almost any broker on this earth, Black real estate broker or agent, and ask them how to protect your asset. They're going to look dumbfounded as hell. They're not going to know what to tell you. And that's the conversation that needs to be had. Stop trying to force home ownership down people's throats so that you can make a commission, because I was that person. Because I didn't understand it myself. And now that I'm on the other side of things, I've owned 4 homes. I bought my first house in my early 20s. I sold it, made 100 grand. Bought my second house before I even turned 30. Sold it, made another 100 grand. Bought my third house for $500,000. Sold it for $700,000. Made $200,000 cash. I bought an $800,000 house. And I lost that house to foreclosure when the real estate market crashed. And that's when I knew, I said, wait a minute. Joke's on me. I never owned that house. That house didn't never belong to me. And the first 15 years, the bank owns that mortgage. I pay 80% interest on that house.
Yeah.
So I'm paying the bank, basically, when people say, well, it's better to own than to rent, is it?
Yeah.
Quantify that statement. Is it? Because there's flexibility in renting. When COVID hit, I was renting. So I was able to not only bypass my last month of rent, but I was able to leave that apartment complex. And a lot of people, they can't walk away from no house.
Yeah.
You got 26 more years.
Yeah.
You can't, you don't get a break.
Mm-hmm. And also learning, you pay for it twice.
Man, you pay for it almost 2.5 times depending on interest rates. You pay for it twice because interest rates are low right now. When interest rates are high, you could pay as much as 3 times more than what the house is worth. 3 times. So if you buy it for $250,000, you're going to pay $750,000 for that house. Mm-hmm. So when people say appreciation, does the appreciation offset that? Mm-hmm. let's be real now. Are you really just gaining back money that you paid out? And are you really gaining more than what you paid out? Would you give me $5,000 and let me give you $2,000 back? Come on now.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Yeah, and there's so much. I mean, I'm currently taking a homeowner. It's just for like the home, you know, first time home buyer program. But I just wanted to take it just so I can learn more. And I swear my brain just feels so racked because there's so many different things that we have. We have an idea of what things look like, what they feel like, and we just have no clue, right? And just being
the only thing they're going to discuss with you in a homeowner seminar is debt to income ratio.
Yep.
You know, they're going to break down the very basics. You know what I'm saying? Like, I did real estate for a decade. And, you know, they're never going to give you, you know, that's why I got into tax lien, you know, because I'm like, okay, I have these properties that I own outright. And if anything were to really, you know, happen bad once I get them rehabbed, you know, me and my family always have a place to be.
Yes.
Even if we have to move, what difference does it make?
Yes.
If we lose everything, it doesn't matter as long as we're together.
Exactly.
And if I have a 6-unit apartment complex, everybody can have their own unit.
Yeah.
And we can rent the other 3 out and let somebody else pay the mortgage.
And that's why I love what you teach. And that's why I love what you do, because I think you know, there are many loopholes and just a lot of things. And it's not just real estate. I think there's a lot of, even when it comes to just money, even just, you know, when you talk about something that I've learned over the past couple of years, you know, because I used to have this mentality and I would just chat with people about this, which is like the rich keep getting richer, the poor keep getting poorer, but it's not, you know, the tax system is set up, which I didn't understand until I had a business and understood how to leverage different things so that, you know, when people hear about, you know, big companies or certain people not paying taxes, we don't have an idea of the way that the tax system works, and we're pitted against each other opposed to really just having an understanding of what it's set up to do and really setting ourselves up like you do, positioning yourself so that you can also, you know, benefit from that in many ways. So I just appreciate you. I appreciate everything that you do. I just look forward to watching your future growth and all that good stuff. So we don't have a huge amount of time, but I just want to quickly touch on, so you have your book, It's Not Him, It's You. So you guys go check that out on Amazon. I think a lot of women know that. And this has really just been the focus of some of the conversations I've been having, which I know are very uncomfortable for a lot of people, especially women. We don't want to admit we are the problem sometimes. But you talk a lot about, you know, mothers raising sons and the type of men that we're creating. Can you just quickly touch on that? Because I know that's been like one of your other, if I would say, just like you were probably the first person I've ever heard address that in that way, opposed to like, you know, this whole feminist movement of like, it's all about men and they're wrong and we're right about everything. So can you touch on that really quickly?
Yeah, I'm definitely not a feminist. I'm a realist. Yeah, because we need a whole, you know, another 2 hours to discuss that. So I did a video because I read an article a few years ago that talked about how Black mothers were destroying their sons. It was written by a Black man, so you have to respect it, right?
Yes.
Because he's clearly somebody's son.
Yeah.
So his perspective was his own experiences, and I'm sure conversations he's had with other Black men. And I read it, and I felt that I was definitely guilty of a lot of actions in there, intentionally and unintentionally. And so I asked my sons to read it and tell me if they felt like any of it applied to me. And out of respect and probably fear, they were like, oh, no, Mom, oh, no, not you. I'm like, okay, if we're going to have a real conversation, you got to be honest, because I can point out at least 4 of those things that I actually am.
Yeah.
So if I can identify it, I know you can. So then they finally opened up and said, yeah, you know, it's true.
Mm.
And so I realized a lot of fault that I had, And mostly out of, you know, again, ignorance, not stupidity. In raising a child, my experience with raising a child was in home ec, where you had an egg that you had to carry around for a day and not drop it.
Right.
Or crack it. That was parenthood training back when I was in school, right?
Yeah.
And now I think they have actual babies that you can't let cry for a certain amount of time, you know, and the birds and the bees, but no one tells you about, you know, how to deal with the child with a temperament problem. They don't tell you how to manage yourself around your child, you know, how you should talk to your child, how you should treat your child. You know what I mean? And excuse me. I think that, you know, Black women, especially women who have been through a lot like myself, we're so hard. We don't have, we're nurturers by nature, but we don't apply that to our children the way that we should, especially our sons. We think that we have to be really, really, really hard on them because there's no man around, but there is no substitute for a man. So the best thing that a woman could be to a son is a nurturing person and an understanding person. That's the best thing that you can be. And, you know, and I even struggle with that now. Both my boys are grown. And I struggle with that now because that's not how I grew up understanding things.
Yeah.
So I shared that information with women to start trying to build better relationships with their kids, even regardless of what age they are. You know, you can turn a relationship because, you know, my family did foster care for a long time, and this much I can tell you. Every last one of those children wanted nothing more and nothing less than their mother's love and acceptance. And I don't give a damn if she was a crack, doing crack on the street, selling her body at that very moment.
Yes.
They did not care.
Mm-hmm.
They did not care. Mm-hmm. So at any stage in that child's life that you can build rapport and recreate something that they didn't have, it's a good thing, and it's a healthy thing, and it's going to help them in life at whatever stage. We all develop. We all evolve. We're all going to grow. We're all going to learn. And Black women specifically have to stop demeaning and demoralizing our sons. We have to stop sexualizing our daughters. I saw a woman, she bought her daughter a birthday cake that was a penis with, you know, semen coming out of it, to say it polite as I possibly can. You know, and that's, you know, she put that all over Facebook, and she was very proud of that, you know, and she was twerking with her daughter and being very inappropriate with her daughter. And I'm like, so exactly where are you raising her to be? And exactly what type of man do you think that she's attracting? You know, Meg Thee Stallion being shot in the foot by, you know, Tory Lanez, who obviously suffers from, you know, arrested development. You know, he's a short man. He has insecurities. He got his hair fixed because his hairline was falling apart. You know, he shoots her in the foot or whatever you want to say about it. And, you know, and she protects him as a Black woman. She protects him because that's what we do.
Right.
You know, the moms protect the sons and allow their inappropriate behavior. The women in their lives protect them and allow their inappropriate behavior. So there's just so many different components that need to be addressed. But the thing with, you know, the Meg Thee Stallion thing and Tory Lanez that's, you know, really, really disturbing is that in addition to her not, you know, speaking out against that situation, if someone said, well, that's what she gets for messing with bad boys. Women love bad boys. I think men, especially insecure men, tend to say that because men who actually get and date a lot of women, they don't say things like that because they get their pick. I think it's the guy who's unattractive and insecure, the Tory Lanez of the world, right? They say things like that. But the truth of the matter is what businessman in politics in Washington, D.C. is going to date Meg the Twerking Stallion? Where exactly is he going to bring her when they're going to a certain type of political event? She has to date within the circle of men who find that behavior to be okay and it's not offensive to their careers.
Mm.
So Black women have some accountability with how they conduct themselves to a certain extent. But, you know, and Black men, you know, they can't always be on the attack. You can't, abuse Black women and then expect for them to keep the street code. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just a snowball effect of so many things. Again, I can't get into all that. I would need two whole more hours to break down everything I just said, because I'm sure people are like, but wait, you said, and that, like, it's too much.
It is.
It's too much to run off in, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. But again, the core of it and the base of it is that Black women, you know, they're going to say, well, what about the daddy? Exactly. You are the final selection process in two things: who you lay down with and if you have that baby. So they say, well, what do you think when having an abortion? That's not a bad idea. A morning after pill, anything, all of that works. Because this is the thing. The minute you do decide to have that baby, you have a different type of responsibility and accountability.
Absolutely.
And you can't be in my inbox asking me to help you, talking about you a single mother of 5 kids. I get to wondering, you know, when at what point in time did you think that it was too much for you? You to be asking another woman who's raising her own kids to help you and to supplement your poor decision making. At some point, you're going to have a sit down with my grandfather while he tell you exactly what he told me, to basically get my ass up and go handle my business since I made the decision to be there. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So I'm telling people to come at me with the same thing. Goodbye. I'm going to tell you like it was told to me. You made your decision. You made your bed. You lay in it.
Yeah. And the core of also, I mean, I think the biggest takeaway I want people to take away, just in, like you said, the conversation is way too deep and it unravels so much stuff in our own community that we don't talk about, that it does cause a lot of problems just for us to excel and to grow and just in general. And it's just that accountability, right? Accountability for
you. Lord, like a cuss word to people.
It is, but it's as a mother, right? You can't, there's certain things you can no longer do. There's certain behaviors you can no longer engage.
Well, it ties into financial literacy and it ties into poverty in the Black community, yeah. Right? Because if you are struggling financially before you even have a child, you have a child and now you're continuing to struggle financially because you didn't wait for him to marry you. No, that doesn't mean that things are going to be perfect, but at least you have a head start, right? Because at least you have two incomes, because hopefully you're not looking at and considering marrying a bum. It's plenty of educated, intelligent, well-to-do Black men who are going to treat you well.
Mm-hmm.
They actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, make better decisions around those things, right? Make better decisions around those things or stay single and keep your legs closed. I don't understand what's so hard about that, because you're not getting child support because he's a bum or selling weed, right? It's going to affect you financially. It's going to prevent you from having your children in an environment that's safe for them. So your son may end up in a gang, may not. It's going to prevent you from being able to have adequate life insurance on you and them, prevent you from having adequate health insurance, prevent you from being able to invest at the level that you would need to invest to secure your financial future. It's way more than I can do what I want to do. It's my body. So what you mean? What you mean? You got to have money to have a baby? Fuck yeah. Yes. Yes, that's an expense.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And your inability to understand that is your inability to parent right there.
Yeah,
because we already have multiple barriers to overcome, and we definitely don't need finance to be one of those. Let that be one of the things that we alleviate from the equation.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah,
we can wrap up.
Yeah, we definitely are. That was a whole word. So I hope you guys are taking some notes. I hope you guys, if you feel a little tingling in your stomach, you feel a little gut check, it's fine. You know, I think that's just how we grow. It feels uncomfortable. Growth on any level feels uncomfortable, but it's necessary for us to progress in our own lives and really take off the masks, right? Social media, like I said in the beginning, allows us to wear masks and to paint these pictures like everything's okay, we're okay. And sometimes it's okay to be like, I'm not okay. And I've made some really poor decisions and I need to do better. And that's a step, right? You have to admit that's one of the first steps. So I thank you so much for your time, Nico. Please let us know, how can we connect more with you? Where can we find you? Where can we invest in Gary? Because I know that program is open until the 31st. And I'll also be sharing my link with you guys as well within the coming week.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. We just got two payments in with someone registering for the class. So the class ends July 31st, and that's so that you have time to prep for the auction, which is September 11th. It's an online auction. You do not have to go anywhere. You just need to take my course so that you can learn how to participate, what to buy. Just know that it's no guarantee, but the possibilities are so high, and it's exciting, and it creates an opportunity, one, for you to gain knowledge that you could possibly use in other areas outside of Gary, but it's just a great, great, great program for you to learn and to possibly get your first investment. I have hundreds of clients who have bought their first home. One of our clients is just posting it. She has a triplex and a house, and she's only 20 something years old, and she's a homeowner, and, you know, and a single mom, if you want to use that term. But, you know, she's a mom nonetheless, and she was able to acquire that, like I said, my other client with her 17 commercial properties, me with my apartment, 16 apartment complex. And I have so many stories of individuals who have done that. To locate me, you can find me at Nico Cherie everywhere, NekoCherie, on all platforms on social media. And if you want to join the Invest Gary movement, it's investgary.com. Or you can go on social media and just snatch a link off of my page and, you know, join the movement before it's gone.
Yes, yes, yes. You guys definitely make sure you tap into that, expand your mind to creating assets and not more liabilities. Nico, I thank you so much for just being who you are. I honor you, and especially more than anything, and this is just a whole nother discussion. Maybe we can connect in a couple months after Invest Gary, and we'll see how everybody does. But really just being a woman who uplifts and empowers other women, there's such strength in that. And I think that's another elephant in the room we don't really talk about in the Black community. It's just uplifting each other. So I just want to thank you for being a representative of that. Obviously, you've done so much work on your own, and it shows. So thank you so much for just being that authentic, genuine person and sharing your light, your wealth of knowledge, and everything you know with the world. You guys, thank you so much for tuning in. As you know, like, rate, and subscribe. Share it with your friends. And as always, you guys, as always, I'm grateful and I'm thankful for you guys listening to this podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to Soul Chat with your host, Ebony Tatora. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, leave a review, and if you love it, share it with your friends. And make sure you join us next week for another conversation with your soul, bringing you thought-provoking conversations that require you to look a little bit deeper than the surface.